Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Mark Striegel, and you are listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. We are doing something really cool today. We are talking with the people who support me on Patreon about one of our favorite albums. It's called Blizzard of Oz by Ozzy Osbourne. And man, just to this day, it has such a warm place in my heart. It is such an important piece of art in my life. And what I did was did a little poll on Patreon. And everyone who supports me on Patreon could vote. There were four albums that I love, and I put those out there, and everyone voted, and Blizzard of Oz won. So we're going to get into the discussion with the people who support me on Patreon. Now, we have 51 supporters on Patreon. Not everyone joined in on this this chat, but a handful of them did, and it was a lot of fun. It's a long discussion. I will tell you, it was recorded in two separate calls. So if I start repeating myself, like talking about Randy Rhoads, you know, doing this or that, and I say it twice in the conversation, I'm not suffering from dementia, not yet, but it's because it was literally two different meetings. So I don't think I repeat myself too much, but I there might be once or twice where I say the same thing twice at two separate points. I tried to edit it so it seems flawless, but it's you know, behind the scenes peek for you guys is that it was recorded in two separate Zoom calls. So that's that. And I'd love to have you guys support me. You folks out there who are not supporters on Patreon, join me for $5 a month. I will mail you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. You'll have the opportunity to participate in Zoom calls like this, or even just one-on-ones. I spoke with Glenn Watson recently on, he's a supporter on Patreon, and we just did a one-on-one for like 20 minutes. It was awesome, talking about rock and stuff, and I'm more than willing to do that with anyone who supports me on Patreon, especially the $5 a month and up tiers on Patreon. I am happy to do that for those people. But yeah, man, so for $5 a month, lots of stuff. You get the Talking Metal t-shirt mailed anywhere in the world. You get a bonus podcast every week. You get even additional bonus podcasts that Victor puts together every other week. So there's lots of great discussion and polls. I'd love to have you join me on Patreon. So without further ado, let's just give a big shout out, a general shout out to everyone on Patreon. I'm not going to go through the laundry list today, but I do want to mention the stars of this show. Obviously, I'm kind of the host and I probably talk more than anyone else, but joining me are some great guys, people who support me, and man, their support means so much to me. Of course, Victor Ruiz is on the call with us. Victor does a lot of work with me on Patreon, actually. Great guy. He has his own show called Mars Attacks. We also got Metal Dan. We got Seth B. out in Kansas. We got Ed Ferguson from Kentucky, right, Ed? Ed's a great guy. Been a long time friend of the show. We got Johan over in Sweden. We got Brad out in Utah, Brad Dahl. And we got Jerry from Long Island. Jerry. Good to hear from Jerry. I think that's it. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone. So small group kind of gathering here to talk about one of our favorite records. We're going to do another one of these real soon. And we hope you come and join us on Patreon and participate in the show behind the scenes and, I guess, on the scenes, in front of the scenes, right here today on this great discussion about Blizzard of Oz with my good friends and supporters from Patreon. All right, let's get into a discussion on one of my favorite albums. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and we are here today discussing an album that we voted on the Patreon page. Basically, what we did is we threw up some records and some albums. There was four albums up there on the Patreon page. I should probably pull that up so everyone knows what we were voting on. And the kind of agreement was that once we came up with a winner, we would allow the people who support me on Patreon to come on a Zoom call with me and discuss the album. So there are two Zoom calls happening, and we'll be kind of hopefully editing them together flawlessly, so it sounds like we're all together at the same time. But because of the different time zones, I wanted to have some different options as far as time of the day goes for us to get together. So the question I sent out there to the people on Patreon, where we have 51 supporters, we had 22 of you guys vote on this, was which record should we discuss on our next Zoom call? And the choices were Blizzard of Oz by Ozzy Osbourne, Ride the Lightning by Metallica, Power and the Glory by Saxon, and Sound of White Noise by Anthrax. So we had 11 votes for Blizzard, 5 for Ride the Lightning, 3 for Power and the Glory, and 3 for Sound of White Noise. So here we are discussing Blizzard of Oz. And let's start. We're going to go over to Sweden, where Johan is standing by. Johan, am I doing a better job at pronouncing your last name? Erdestrom.
It's okay. Still,
it's okay. Say it for me.
Erdestrom. You know, the Swedish with the two dots over, it's Ö. Yeah, so in Swedish, I say Erdestrom.
Erdestrom.
But you don't have to do that.
Okay.
It's hard. It's hard.
All right, man. Well, we know you had, I don't know, can I mention on air that you had been under the weather? And we were just talking about that before we started recording. You're feeling a little bit better, but still not 100%, right?
I feel 100% when I work and I in my everyday life, but I tried to run the other day and I had to stop at 800 meters because I couldn't do anymore.
Right on.
I was tired in my whole body. So that's COVID.
Yeah. Well, we wish you the best of luck with that. And we hope you're back to 100% soon. I hope I get over there to Sweden and taste one of your meals at some point. I'm dead serious about this, man. I really have a desire to travel to Sweden. I've never been there. And you guys have such good music over there. I just got to get over there. And it sounds like we have good food over there from you too. As you explained to us last time, you have won some awards working with the Olympics, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've competed in the Olympics 2016. Yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome. Cool. Well, let's get to the rock talk right now because we have some other people here too. Johan, the Blizzard of Oz album by Ozzy Osbourne for me was kind of a game changer. And I'll just share a few quick thoughts and then I'll let you talk. But to me, 1980, when it came out, was a time when the tides were changing, styles were changing. Not just fashion styles, but, you know, political styles and music styles. And to me, what Ozzy did with this, now we have to remember Ozzy had toured with Van Halen on one of those final Sabbath tours for Never Say Die. He had become really friendly with the Van Halen guys, including even taking David Lee Roth home to meet his parents. And they were kind of cocaine buddies from what I understand. And he was, I believe, very impressed with him. So when he set out to go solo, I think he was really attracted to that Southern California big rock sound that the Van Halen brothers and David Lee Roth and Michael Anthony had kind of almost invented, if you will. And so I feel like he was really looking for somebody who could kind of fill that vein. And I want to break down the album song by song and talk about that. But I really believe that that was a big influence, because we still do hear Sabbath on this record. Like if you listen to some of the closing tracks, especially to me, they have a very Sabbathy sound to them. But on the flip side, there's other songs that are very Van Halen-y, especially a song that a lot of people don't talk about. But when I re-listened to the album today, No Bone Movies, to me, has Van Halen written all over it. I think that could have been a Van Halen song. But then there's other songs, you know, Crazy Train, where we also hear, to me, a very much a Van Halen influence. But like on Revelation, Steal Away, to me, I hear Sabbath, not necessarily the big doom Sabbath, but I hear like Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, the more produced Sabbath. So to me, Ozzy really accomplished, you know, bringing some of that Sabbath doom and gloom to the California party vibe sound that Van Halen had, and successfully kind of combined the two with this record, moving forward really into a new musical landscape that really hadn't been visited yet. In my opinion, it was a groundbreaking record. But let's break it down. What album did you vote for, Johan, out of the four that we had up there?
Oh, I don't remember. Ride the Lightning.
Ride the Lightning, right. Okay. Yeah. A very amazing record too. One of my all-time favorites.
All records that you put up are amazing.
Right.
And the most interesting one would have been to talk about Power and the Glory.
Yeah, that would have been a great one to talk about. We have some other people joining on the Zoom call as we're talking here, which we will get to everyone. But Johan, how do you feel about Blizzard of Oz? Is it a big album in your life? Do you have a big emotional connection to it? What are your thoughts on that record?
My first contact with Blizzard of Oz was in around 1984, because I'm born in 72, so I was a little bit too young when it was released. And Sweden was kind of like East Germany back then. So records didn't come here as fast, probably, as in the US, I guess. But there was a bootleg tape who was floating around in my village it was supposed to be Randy Rhoads' last concert. And that was the first time I heard the songs. And we all copied, you know, cassette to cassette. I later found out that it was Brad Gillis who played guitar on that.
Wow, tape. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I think that, I Don't Know, is the best opening song, one of the best opening songs ever made live for a concert. Whenever Ozzy goes on stage with I Don't Know, I think it's a perfect opener.
Absolutely.
The album is a classic for me. 10 out of 10, of course. I have a hard time listening to it nowadays because we have these rock channels on the radio, and they play Crazy Train and they play all those songs over and over again. So
it's overplayed.
Hard to listen to. Yeah, it's really overplayed. But Diary of a Madman isn't that overplayed. So I think that is a still more interesting record for me. Mr. Crowley, the solo in Mr. Crowley was also a big thing here in Sweden among the musicians. They all talked about the outro solo of Mr. Crowley. Was it the same for you guys?
Oh, yeah. And Mr. Crowley to me was major. The melodic guitar playing on that, for sure. I mean, even the keyboards, which were, who was that? It was Don Airey, right? I mean, such a unique sound. And man, it was funny when I saw Deep Purple play a couple of years ago. Don Airey did a keyboard solo and he like almost played Mr. Crowley. He had that exact sound during the solo, and it was like he was hinting at it, but he didn't quite go there. And it made me wonder if he didn't want to get involved in like copyright problems or something. But that keyboard sound is such a distinct, incredible sound to open side two of the record. And so good. And again,
I really, really think that Van Halen's influence on this record was big. I mean, as well as Sabbath. You know, people say, well, he took a big step away from Sabbath with this sound. But again, I challenge anybody to listen to Revelation, Mother Earth, even into Steal Away the Night. I mean, especially Revelation, Mother Earth, to me, has very much Sabbath sounds going on there that... you know, take me back, not necessarily to the Paranoid record, but more to Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. So such an amazing record. And again, I think those final three songs for me, No Bone Movies, Revelation, Mother Earth, and Steal Away the Night are the ones I can listen to today and still truly enjoy. Because like you, Johan, I'm a little fried. Like if I see Ozzy in concert, I love hearing Crazy Train. But if I hear it on the radio, it's like, it's so ingrained in me in this point. Like sometimes it's hard and it's strange to say that, but it's hard to hear it yet one more time because I've been listening to it since the album came out, like when I was 11 years old or something. But great stuff, Johan. We appreciate your support on Patreon. Yeah, go ahead.
Question. Yeah. Now I have so many wise guys on the Zoom call. Who wrote the songs on the album? Is it Ozzy alone? Ozzy with Randy Rhoads? Who wrote those?
It's credited to Ozzy Osbourne, Randy Rhoads, and Bob Daisley, with the exception of the song I mentioned earlier, which to me is such an amazing song, No Bone Movies. And Lee Kerslake has a songwriting credit on that too. So it does appear that it's the three main songwriters. And I will stand up for Ozzy Osbourne because Bob Daisley, I think, gets a lot of credit. And he deserves credit. But when I spoke to Jakey Lee, he made it sound like Daisley helped with the lyrics, but you know, musically he was like, oh, let's rearrange this section. He was more like an arranger, according to the way Jakey Lee described it. And I always get ticked when he, you know, seems to want to take credit for everything that Ozzy ever did, because Ozzy, it's his voice and those melodies, which were his, he wrote those, that really helped sell that music along with Randy Rhoads. But I don't take anything away from Bob Daisley. He is listed as one of the main songwriters on the record. And definitely you got to have respect for that guy because he is definitely a powerful part of the team that made this album so, so good. Let's move on. Give some other people a chance to talk. Victor, how are you, man? Can you hear me, Victor?
Sorry, I was unmuting myself. I'm doing good.
Cool, man.
Cool to hear from Johan there. A lot of cool points that you brought up, Mark.
Let's hear some from you. Let's start out with, how does this album weigh emotionally for you? Is it, because for me, it's almost a spiritual experience when I listen to it, even though some of those songs are so played out. It just means so much to me on an emotional level because I grew up with it. And when I was down and out and getting picked on in seventh grade, you know, I'd come home and listen to that record and it took me away to another place. It made me feel like I was a part of something bigger than the bullies at school. I don't know. So for me, there's just deep emotional connection to it. You know, when I hear the song D by Randy Rhoads, you know, the acoustic song instrumental that he has on there, I almost get welled up at times. I mean, it's so, to me, that it's such a strong emotional connection to this stuff. And you know, it almost goes beyond the music, kind of. It's it's just ingrained in who I am. How does this album relate to you on an emotional level? And are there any things about the record you'd like to discuss or mention?
Yeah, this album to me is huge. It's I was reworking the Mars Attacks website, and episode 120 of Mars Attacks just focuses on this album because I think it's so important in the overall landscape of hard rock and metal. It was the world's, you could say that the Japanese Quiet Riot albums introduced the world, you know, part of the world to Randy Rhoads, but really Blizzard is the album that did that in the grand scheme of things. I remember being a kid and hearing Crazy Train for the first time and being like, holy crap, what's this? You know, it was just the whole intro, and even to Johan's point, the intro to something like I Don't Know was just like so mystical, the way that it just fades in. With Crazy Train, it was, to me, that was a big deal. And I'll honestly say that because of how old I was when the album came out, Tribute is the album that where I first got to listen to a lot of these tracks. And then I went back, got the studio album. And obviously that's played a huge part in my, you know, the soundtrack of my life since then. And the same as what you and Johan have mentioned, some of these songs are so played out that, you know, sure, I love listening to them once or twice a year, but after that, you know, I can't. I've just heard them so much. But to your point, you bring up the whole California sound. If you really think about it, once everything went down with Lee and with Bob, think about his band. He brings in Rudy Sarzo. He brings in Tommy Aldridge. So essentially, his entire band is based out of California. You know, so he was definitely going for something in that vein. And even further, to further that along, once Randy passes away and he records Bark at the Moon, he brings in Jakey Lee. So that's, you know, obviously Ozzy was trying to mix his Sabbath background with other stuff that was going on. Him and Sharon were smart to that, you know, and Ozzy maintained, we've talked about this a bunch, Ozzy maintained his popularity while Sabbath really didn't after Dio left, and you could argue after Ian Gillan left. So
yeah, you could argue, and there's no disrespect here towards Ronnie James Dio, who is the god and absolutely amazing. But the reality of things are that, listen, Heaven and Hell, Mob Rules, amazing, amazing records, Mob Rules. I just love those records. But they were not at the level that they were 6 years previous, or even 4 years previous with Ozzy. I mean, they never regained that ground that they lost. And now those records are considered absolute classics and masterpieces, but they really struggled bringing people to shows in the States. And I don't know about Europe, but they weren't accepted by a lot of people quite as much as Ozzy was. I mean, Ozzy was all over the rock radio, especially in the Midwest and, you know, in the suburbs of New York and the working class towns. Ozzy was just blowing up. I mean, I remember as a kid, I Don't Know, Crazy Train, Goodbye to Romance, Suicide Solution, Mr. Crowley, all on the radio being played. And that is crazy for a rock record. You know, I mean, he had so much to prove. He'd been essentially fired from Black Sabbath. The record label wasn't even behind him. You know, they thought he was a joke. The 70s were over, you know, bell bottoms and doom riffs were not cool anymore. So he not only won the fans over, made new fans who were never into Black Sabbath, but brought some of the Sabbath fans along with him, but he won over the industry, really. I mean, it's quite impressive in my opinion.
Yeah. The last thing that I wanted to touch upon is I remember years ago reading in a guitar magazine where Revelation Mother Earth may have been the catalyst for the whole thrash metal move. That whole movement, because if you think about it, think back to songs like Battery by Metallica, how it has that acoustic intro and then it comes into the, you know, the full blown bombastic part of the song. Revelation Mother Earth has that whole like acoustic beginning to it. And then you get to that solo and it kind of takes off and it really continues into Steal Away. But I remember reading an article, and I don't remember because it was so long ago, where they credited that song for being a huge influence on a lot of the thrash bands taking, you know, that acoustic intro to kind of build a song up and then finally give you that kick in the ass when the, you know, the amps finally get turned on. So
it could be.
I found that to be interesting.
Yeah, it could be. I know, to me, it was the Ride the Lightning record, which we mentioned earlier, that really
put out that blueprint for so many like thrash and heavy metal records to follow, where it started with that, you know, mellow acoustic-esque, at least, intro into Fight Fire with Fire. But that's a different album. We are talking about Blizzard of Oz today. A couple quick points. Tribute was the record that you mentioned. I know Johan mentioned a live bootleg tape. My problem with Tribute was this, and I do love that record. I think it's a good record, but the tempos are too fast on some of those songs that, to me, they lose the potency and the groove that they had on Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman. I really felt like the tempos were just a little out of control on that record. Live After Death by Iron Maiden, I believe, suffers a similar fate. Just for me personally. And you mentioned Randy Rhoads pre Ozzy Osbourne, and I've had people send me links and say, see, Randy was really great, but you know, in 1979 here with, or 1977 here with Quiet Riot. But the thing is, he was good, but something happened to Randy between 1978 and 1980. And he, in my opinion, grew tremendously as a player. And I can't help but think that that was the influence of Van Halen exploding onto the scene, and everyone had to step it up. And I believe it was probably Randy too. And just one more thought, and then we will get to Jerry from Long Island, and we got Brad from Utah on the line. What was my other thought? I think I lost it. Oh, and big shout out to Max Norman, who produced this record. And I was going to say something else and it slipped my mind. So let's go to Brad out there in Utah, Yarg Radio. How are you, man?
You're pretty good, guys. I'm at 15%.
Yeah, it's 9:30 out there, man.
10:30.
Oh, 10:30. Oh, okay. You aren't on LA time?
Part of me is, but no.
Okay.
The state. It's where is that?
Mountain
this
time. Okay.
This is the mountains here.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, hey, everybody. Mistake. Hey, Johan. Good to see you. And Jerry, can't see you, but glad you're there. And of course, Victor. And Mark, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. Thanks for your support.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just tell you about this album real quick. You know, when Ozzy left Sabbath, as a huge Sabbath fan, it's like, okay, what's going to happen? Of course, the Black Sabbath album came out first with Dio. And I got to say that when that album came out, I liked it, but I wasn't in love with it. When this album came out, which was almost not, I don't know, like 6-7 months later, I remember going and buying it. And I took it home, immediately put it on cassette, because that's what we did back then. You can't listen to a record in your car. And so I listened to, that's where I listened to all my music, was in my car.
So you bought the record and then you dubbed it to cassette?
Oh, yeah.
And I will say this, those Maxell Type 2 cassettes, man, they were 90 minutes. And this album was, you know, the original version before they added the bonus tracks and all that shit, it was under 40 minutes. So you could fit it on one side of a Maxell Type 2 tape, which is what I always did.
Yeah, that's a Maxell was that's exactly what I went for as well.
Type 2, I hope, not Type 1, because they didn't sound as good.
It was gold. I remember that.
Yeah, the Type 2. Yep.
But anyway, that was a long time ago, dude. But anyway, when I first put the record on, and I was such a musical snob back then. I would rarely record like a whole album. I would go through and I would edit out songs I didn't like and just only record the ones I liked. And even sometimes I would cut out parts of a song, which is pretty funny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But this one, I'm pretty sure I cut out Goodbye to Romance.
I mean, I could see that as a young kid, you know, wanted to get like knocked on your ass every time with heaviness. But I will say that Goodbye to Romance, I mean, nowadays I listen to that, it's just so well crafted, man. What a great, you know, written song.
I get that. It's a good song, but it wasn't what I wanted to hear. You're right. I wanted to rock, you know? So when I drop the needle on there and you hear the big, and then, it's like, holy crap, what is this? And, you know, I'm going to go against you on this, Mark. You said it was very Sabbath-y. I really didn't hear a lot of Sabbath in this album. What I heard was something that I feel like was totally new and different. And I'm going to give credit to Randy Rhoads for all that. And I'm going to say this is probably one of the top albums in rock history, mostly because of Randy Rhoads and the influence he's had. I mean, since then, most guitar players that I've played with, they cite Randy Rhoads as their number one influence. And that's, you know, you can't argue with that. And he was just huge. But I believe he wrote most of that album, wrote the riffs anyway. We can argue about what Ozzy's input was to the whole thing. I got to give Bob Daisley credit for the lyrics because it really sounds like he's speaking for Ozzy there. I don't know. That sounds like exactly what you would think Ozzy would be saying. He probably still doesn't know. But great stuff. I mean, Suicide Solution, Revelation, Mother Earth. Yeah, great. Just incredible. I thought the lyrics were fantastic. And right. Even Crazy Train, as overplayed as it is, the lyrics are total Ozzy. If Ozzy could write lyrics, I think he would.
Well, yeah, and I will stop you a little bit there because the way I understand it is, and there's been some confirmation on this. I mean, Ozzy did write lyrics. I mean, but he had dyslexia. Lyrics were tough, but he wrote the lyrics to, you know, the song Black Sabbath. He wrote the lyrics to He wrote the lyrics to the song Black Sabbath as Geezer. He did, you know, and he wrote the lyrics to Am I Going Insane? I mean, that was him. There was another, there's numerous Sabbath songs that he wrote the lyrics almost 100%. With his solo career, he would be like, yeah, wine is fine, but whiskey's quicker. You know, Suicide is slow with liquor. You know, I got this song. It's about Bon Scott, Suicide Solution. Bob, help me finish these lyrics and write these lyrics. And that was the way I got it. He came up with the subject matter in possibly the title and sometimes even some of the lyrics, and Daisley would complete the lyrics. And I think that plays into what you're saying because they were very Aussie, you know, all the lyrics, they were had his flavor to them. So, but yeah, we cannot take away from Bob Daisley's input, but yeah, absolutely. And just real quick, and then I want to get back to you, Brad, and then jump over to Jerry. The Sabbath sounds that I hear, it's the kind of the dark vibe that Sabbath had. You know, I believe he brought some of that with him to this record, but it definitely wasn't the sound of the Paranoid record. It wasn't War Pigs or Iron Man. But I do believe that there was some of that Sabbath, like if you listen to Never Say Die, the album, to me, that was a bridge, man. That was a bridge from what Sabbath had been doing to what Ozzy ended up doing. There's some real commercial sounding songs on that record. Beatlesque melodies on Never Say Die, you know, and I even could go back to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, which was more of orchestrated. I mean, Rick Wakeman was playing some piano on there. There were studio musicians brought in to do different things, you know, like strings and stuff here and there. And I do believe some of that transfers over to what he did on this record and maybe even more so what he did on Diary of a Madman. But let's jump over to our main man, Jerry. Jerry, how are you, man?
Good. How you doing, Mark?
Good. Wow. What a clean, clear connection, man. Sounds like you're on a, what are you on, man? You got a high quality mic there?
iPhone 12.
Oh, the 12. Nice. Nice. I got a 12 too. Cool, man. How you been? All right.
I've been great. How are you?
Oh, I'm awesome. And I know you are a rocker for all your life. Let's talk about this record, Blizzard of Oz. First memories of hearing it. Are you a fan of it, Jerry?
Oh my, are you kidding me? As soon as I heard it, I was like, what the f-? I mean, Crowley's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, the guitar tones, I mean, that whole era, I guess from 78 to 80, you can compare Shanker's tone to Van Halen's tone to Randy Rhoads' tone. So they're all similar to me.
That is a good point, because you do hear, I hear some of that tone, and I don't know if it's the Marshall tubes and the amp or what, but Shanker, I mean, everyone says, well, Randy Rhoads, he was like the next guy who picked up what Van Halen was doing. To me, he was, you know, as far as guitar heroes go, he was kind of the next guy after Van Halen. And then, of course, we got the Lynches and the Martinis and all these other guys. But yeah, I hear that there is some Shanker in Rhoads is playing for sure. I hear that too. And I haven't heard anybody else say that. So that's definitely a good observation. Do you remember hearing like the songs for the first time? Do you have a memory of that, Jerry?
Yes, I do.
Was it on the radio or?
Yeah. B-A-B.
B-A-B. And where was that? Long Island?
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And then did you go buy the record?
Absolutely. The album cover is just ridiculous. How do you not buy it after seeing that cover?
And were you in school at this time? Like,
yeah, high school. Yeah.
And what was the reaction from people at your high school? Was it a big album among the people at the high school, or was it more like a certain group of high school?
All the jocks were listening to it. All the greasers were listening to it. I mean, we played it before every hockey when I was growing up. You know, Crazy Train.
Yeah.
I
mean,
how's that not get you fired up?
So you were a hockey player in high school?
Yeah, still a hockey player.
Right on, right on. What game were you at the other night? I saw something on Instagram.
It was game 3, Bruins and Islanders. And
right.
Game four's tonight, and I'll be there again.
Nice, nice, cool. By the way, my friend, totally random, my friend got a job with the NHL, and he was at the game too, working as a camera guy.
I thought it was NHL Network.
Yes, yep, yep.
Over there in Jersey. That's where I sent you to go get a job.
Yes, Secaucus. Yeah, right. I applied there, but I actually applied through a couple different people. I didn't get the job.
The MLB Network is there too.
Yes, correct. Correct. Cool. And Jerry, just random outside of the Aussie talk, I know we go to a lot of concerts and we've seen you at some shows. Do you have any tickets coming up? Have you bought anything? Looking forward to any shows?
Alice Cooper here in Farmingville, which is about 10-minute walk from my house.
Awesome.
And Genesis at the new Belmont Arena.
Really? Wow. So this is Genesis with Phil Collins back in the band?
Correct. And here's the strange thing. Tickets for that concert went on sale, had to be a week before this whole lockdown, unlockdown thing went down. So somebody in that Genesis camp knew what was about to happen because the tickets were on sale a week before we were all doing things again. So I jumped on it.
Right on. Man, I want to see Genesis. It's a good tip. I got to look into that. I just bought Megadeth tickets yesterday, so I'm excited for that.
Come on. You and Emily, come on out to Belmont, brand new arena.
Really? Wow. Well, it's tempting. It's tempting because we're definitely both ready to catch some shows, and we both love Genesis. So good tip, man. And how many times have you seen Ozzy in concert, Jerry?
It for him with Motley Crue, I don't know, 10?
10? Nice.
I need Maiden to hit the road. Come on out to Brooklyn.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Brad, did you have anything else you wanted to say? I felt like maybe we cut you short.
Oh, that's fine, man. I just want to say, I think Ozzy also adopted a bit of a different singing style with his solo stuff as compared to in Black Sabbath. And so went on from there. But again, I'll just state, this is just one of the greatest albums in the history of rock. And it stands alone. But I'm going to give Randy Rhoads most of the credit for that. So there you go.
I agree.
Right on. Right on. And Victor, Johan.
Now you go, Victor.
The only thing that I wanted to add is that years ago, before Chris Sangaridis died, he actually sent me a quote about this album. He was the original producer on the album, but due to an ear infection, he couldn't complete the project.
Any summary you can do of it? Because we probably...
Okay, so basically he says that when he showed up, David Arden gave him the position. He showed up and Ozzy had no idea that he was supposed to be producing the album. Once they hashed things out, they went full on with the album. And afterwards, He says that that he met up with Randy at a Gary Moore gig, and on the way to the party, Randy Rhoads told him that he felt that the sound of the album sucked. He said he wasn't happy with how it turned out after I left. It made me feel that he appreciated my efforts, but ultimately it just goes to show you that you can't hold back great songs, even with fairly average production.
All right. Well, to each his own. It's hard to quote a dead man, but you know, the thing is, I think the production is stellar. I mean, I just listened to it today on my AirPods. I think everything is so clear and just in your face. But yeah, I'm going to jump over to Metal Dan out in California, our longest running patron. Dan, thank you for your support, man. I mean, you've been doing this longer than anybody, and I can't thank you enough for supporting me month after month after month. And I'm so glad you're here talking Blizzard of Oz with us. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, and I'm about a computer help away from getting my wife to also join you on Patreon to just try to get that $100. I mean, 100 users.
100 users. Cool. Well, we're at 51, so we got a ways to go. But I appreciate that, Metal Dan. And let's talk about where you're sitting, first of all. I love the Iron Maiden stuff in the back. Maiden, obviously a big band. Overkill. Out of those four records, which one did you vote for? Did you vote for Blizzard of Oz, Metal Dan?
I didn't vote. I let it be up to the people. That was a hard choice, especially since you threw in Saxon. That was like, where'd that come from?
That's just an album I love. And a lot of people will tell you, oh, well, with Saxon, it's Denim and Leather, or it's earlier Saxon. But to me, with that record, they kind of took more of a step forward into the 80s metal territory, less kind of stepping out of the 70s. And it was a little more produced, a little more slick. I love those songs. I love that record. And I saw them shortly after that record came out in concert, and maybe that has something to do with it, but that just has a really important place in my heart, Power and the Glory. But yeah, so that's kind of where that came from. But let's talk Blizzard of Oz. When do you remember hearing Blizzard of Oz? Are you a fan of the record? Let's hear from Metal Dan on Blizzard of Oz.
Yeah, huge fan of Blizzard of Oz. I was young. I was probably in junior high school, and that was right up before the US Festival, which was in my area out in DeVore, California, which is about 50 miles less so away, which I've been to many times, not the US Festival, but those grounds, those hallowed grounds. I've been there many times. I've been at an Oz Fest over there and had to wait over 2 hours, 3 hours to get out of the parking lot. That's my wow. memory. If, yeah. I've got this huge box set from that, wow. that Ozzy put out. Yeah, the Diary yeah. and the Blizzard.
Right.
It's really cool. It's got a great picture book and all that. My memory is, once again, just like my last time I called in, KMET playing the hell out of Over the Mountain, or, everything from that. Yeah, Crazy Train. And I don't know, not Over the Mountain. Just hearing that all the time. Those two albums go together so well. So it's almost like a double album.
Right. It really is. And they were recorded very close together. Of course, the band that recorded them wasn't the band that toured post Diary, at least. And and even the band that was originally pictured on the Diary of the Madman record wasn't the band that actually played on it, because we had Rudy Sarzo and Tommy Aldridge having their picture on the inner sleeve, if you remember back in the day.
As a kid, totally believed that that's who the members were, and I didn't know who Bob Daisley and Kirksley is. But I have a question for you. I mean, one of the standout tracks for me is Steal Away. The bass playing by Bob is just it's just killer. If you give somehow an experiment, and you give this, as me being a bass player as well, you give that song to another bass player, would they come up with the same lines that Bob came up with?
I would say so. Probably not. Yeah, I would say probably not.
It's just crazy. It's so good. And since my time is limited, my other question to you, since you met Ozzy, and I'm a big I hear that Ozzy smells really good. What does Ozzy right. smell? What does Ozzy smell like?
You know, I'd have to bring my wife down here. Maybe we can get her to come down and answer that question for you.
The rumor I have is it's a tobacco-like cologne. but they won't give out exactly what he uses.
Yeah, it is. I don't know, but I do know that in, I believe it's his book, that he talks about, you know, growing up with no money and just being so poor. And I think the family like had an outhouse. They didn't even have like a toilet in the house, and just him always feeling dirty and smelly and being made fun of for not smelling nice. And as soon as he got some money, he was like, really got kind of obsessed with smelling good and being clean all the time. So I, again, Emily would be able to tell you what he smelled like, because she always brings that up. But yeah, he definitely comes in the room, and you know, there's sometimes when somebody comes in the room and you're like, oh, they got too much cologne on. It's close to that, but not quite there, because he does smell good and pleasant, and it doesn't really, you don't really cringe when you smell him, you know. But yeah, great smelling guy for sure. But yeah, man, so many good songs on the record. I'm with you with Steal Away the Night. I can't listen to that, like, those last two songs, Revelation, Mother Earth, and Steal Away the Night. I love the way they flow together. I can't listen to them separate. To me, you have to listen to those two songs together. It's such an incredible ending for the record. I mean, his first three solo records just had these epic endings, you know, and that right there, wow, is just quite an ending. I always point to No Bone Movies too as being the most Van Halen-esque song on the record. It really, if you listen to that, picture David singing that, David Lee Roth, and it sounds like it could be a Van Halen song, probably one of the more overlooked songs on the record. Because I don't know where you are out there in California, Metal Dan, but I don't know, Crazy Train, Goodbye to Romance, Suicide Solution, Mr. Crowley, where I was living at that time in the Midwest, those were played on the radio, all those songs. I mean, and that's a good big chunk of the record right there. So all those songs getting airplay in where I live, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I moved there. I didn't, you know, it's weird. I didn't move there until 81, late 81, but it still felt like this was a new record at that time, even though it only came out in 1980. But yeah, thank you for sharing those memories. When's the first time you saw Ozzy in concert, Metal Dan?
Ooh, I think it, was it Metallica? Yeah, I think it had to be, the 86. Yeah.
So the Ultimate Sin tour with Metallica.
Metallica killed, and I went back the next night for Long Beach, because it was like, that was the first time seeing Metallica. It was all about that more than anything.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Great memories. All right. So let's jump over to Seth. He is in Kansas. Seth, how are you, man? I've seen you many times in the Jeff Pilson meditation / yoga class. I missed a couple weeks, and then I did finally get back this week and I didn't see you. But isn't that kind of fun to have a little session there with Jeff Pilson? It's always real intimate and stuff.
Yeah, it's a great part of my week. And I've missed a couple of weeks and looking forward to getting back to it. I don't know if you were there a recent week. He did his first one on the road. So it's good to know that touring is not going to be the end of our meditation class.
I was at the first one he did on the road, and then I missed a couple, and then I was back last week, which was good. But yeah, absolutely. And I mean, really, it's a very intimate group. If anyone's interested in joining it, just DM me, reach out. We can hook you up with how to join that meditation / yoga group that Jeff Pilson conducts every Monday. So Seth, in Kansas, where in Kansas are you? Are you near a major city? Are you in farm town? Where are you?
Yeah, I live way out in the country. Wichita's the closest city, but I live 12 miles from the Oklahoma border.
Okay. So when do you remember hearing this album, Blizzard of Oz? I don't know how old you are, Seth. Were you old enough to remember when it came out?
I mean, I was kind of aware of Crazy Train, but I grew up in an Air Force family living all over. And my entry into hard rock was more 83. Okay. So Jakey Lee era Ozzy was my Ozzy. And I'm probably going to lose my metal card for admitting this, but until I knew we were doing this, I had never purchased this album. I just kind of thought, I know all those songs.
Yeah.
And so it was amazing to really listen to it as a piece, and, you know, particularly D into Suicide Solution into Mr. Crowley is just this amazing 1-2-3.
Right, right. And you have to remember that back in the day, we actually did have to flip that record over or that cassette over to get to Mr. Crowley, which was the first song on side two. And but yeah, I mean, the whole record to me just moves from the get-go. And, you know, it was a short record. It was 39 minutes long, you know, and that's something I think a lot of albums later, like when we got to the CD era, they did really suffer. Because I always remember even like bands like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I always thought Blood Sugar Sex Magik would have been this epic, perfect record, but it was just like 10, 15 minutes too long. And I feel like in the vinyl days that albums were shorter, and you know, it's the golden rule of show business, leave them wanting more, which this record definitely did. I don't like listening to it with the bonus tracks because to me, Steal Away, Mother Earth, into Steal Away the Night. I mean, that to me is the ending. You don't want to go into, you know, Looking at Me, Looking at You, a B-side single after that. You know, that's just me. I did enjoy listening to some of the like outtakes and stuff that they did put up, like the guitar vocal mix of Goodbye to Romance, which I believe came out in 2010, is definitely an interesting listen if you haven't heard that. But Jakey Lee era Ozzy, did you get to see Ozzy live like when you were a kid in the 80s?
Yeah, it sounds like we all saw that Ultimate Sin tour with Metallica opening.
Yes, yeah.
And I feel like it was a Monday night and my parents didn't necessarily know that I was there.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, my parents would have known. They always had to know where I was. But yeah, for me, it was definitely a weekend night. I saw it in the Chicago Pavilion. And it is a night where Jakey Lee fell over on stage and couldn't finish the show, which is... which the crowd was not happy about. But let's get back to Blizzard of Oz. So the album itself, when you got into Ozzy in 83, you never went back and bought this actual album, but did you get to know the songs from radio?
Yeah, from radio and from being on compilations. And I know we've got a short time. I won't give you too much of it, but I have this kind of grand unified theory of Ozzy that Ozzy has pretty much two personas when he's singing. And one of them is this detached nihilist, like I'm observing the world going to hell and I can't do anything about it. And one is I'm deeply personally involved and I'm singing with commitment and I'm feeling the anguish or I'm feeling the fear. And I think this album has some of both of those things. And I think part of what makes Crazy Train such an amazing song is that he has both of those personas in the same song.
Right on, right on. And I mean, that's kind of getting back to what I was hinting at earlier, where there was this kind of party vibe thing going on there, which I feel was definitely influenced by what he saw Van Halen do on the Never Say Die tour. And I mean, listen, he went to Southern California to get Randy. You know, the rest of the band was, you know, the band that played on these records, Diary and Blizzard, they weren't California guys. But you know, by the time Diary was released, the album had all Americans in it. I think all Californians actually, because we had Rudy stepping in for the tour and the live albums and stuff. And of course, he was Southern California, Randy Rhoads's friend. And Tommy Aldridge, I'm not sure where Tommy is, but from, I'd have to look that up. But anyways, it was an American band. Oh, born in Mississippi. Interesting. Huh. Yeah. So he ended up with this all American band. And yeah, so Randy Rhoads too, to me, you just cannot underestimate his influence. I mean, because to me, he was the second guy after Van Halen. You know, no one could play like Van Halen. And suddenly there was Randy Rhoads. It's like, oh, there's another, you know? And it was, I remember as a kid, just really feeling that was a big moment for guitar playing, Randy Rhoads coming into the spotlight. And
different than Eddie, you know, definitely had a little bit more of the classical flavor going at times, and just, man, but what a shredder. And I really think Eddie was a big influence on Randy, because if you listen to Randy pre Ozzy, you know, when he played with Quiet Riot, I mean, he could definitely play, he played really well, but something happened in between those two Quiet Riot Japanese release albums and the Ozzy record. I mean, his playing just, you know, excelled leaps and bounds in my opinion. But let's go over to Ed Ferguson. Do we have audio with you? Can you hear us? Yeah, I hear you. Okay. We had Ed earlier having some,
got the notebook, some
audio problem. Cool. Ed, how are you, man? You're in Kentucky, right?
That's right. Right in the middle in Lexington.
Yes. And I don't know if people know this story, but the first time I kind of got to know you, correct me if I'm wrong, was there was a, we had a Frankie Benelli interview on our live show. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe like 10 years ago, I'm thinking at this point. And we somehow, the long story short, the people at the studio wiped the file afterwards. So there was like maybe 30 people listening to this show live. And, you know, then we were going to send it out as a podcast, and somehow the file was wiped and we sent it to you to try to help see if you could recover the file. That's and true. And we couldn't, but we definitely appreciate that.
I was able to recover like thousands of little clips from commercials and such, but nothing from that show.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. And on that show, Frankie Benelli spoke a long time about his friendship with Randy Rhoads. So coincidentally, but anyways, Ed, thank you for your support on Patreon and for listening for all these years. Let's talk about this record, Blizzard of Oz. I know you're a longtime metal fan. Are you a big fan of this record? Did you vote for the record out of the four records that we had up?
No, I voted for Ride the Lightning. I hope you'll do that one someday.
Yeah, we have to, because that's one of my favorite records of all time, man.
Oh, me too. It's at the top of the list. This would have been my second choice. I do love Ozzy. And
yeah, I
love, I
can see him.
The first four records. I listen to every one of those records to this day.
Yeah, well, we could have a discussion about all these records. I will give a shout out to The Ultimate Sin. Ed, guys, always gets onto the Zoom and he has the album set up behind him. So right behind Ed on Zoom, I'm looking at Blizzard of Oz, Diary of a Madman, Bark the Moon, and The Ultimate Sin. The Ultimate Sin record, it always bums me out when I hear Ozzy kind of trash it, because I feel like us fans love it and it's one of his best selling albums too. So yeah. I hate when he kind of disses it, but
yeah, it's got Jakey Lee playing, so it's hard. It's hard for it not to be good with a guitarist like that.
Absolutely. But let's talk about Blizzard of Oz, because that's what we're talking about today. Yeah. Do you remember hearing the record for the first time?
No. Like the other two records we did, I was 10 years old when this came out.
Right. Okay.
And so I wasn't really, you know, collecting music. And because of my kind of sanitized life with family and church and not being allowed to listen to rock music, I didn't learn about it until I started to grow up, more like 13. I think my first memory.
Still, that's pretty young though. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still pretty young. That's right. My first memory was seeing Bark at the Moon on MTV at a friend's house. But I knew all about Ozzy because, you know, growing up in that atmosphere that I did, going to a Christian church that had the guys that would come over and do rock music seminars and scare our parents to death so they take away our music and all of that.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, I was in junior high school at the time, you know, probably starting with fifth grade on into sixth and seventh grade. All of his kids had tons of rumors about all the rock stars, you know. And I was hearing about Ozzy all the time because he did the thing where he bit the head off the bat.
Yes. And, yep.
You know, those rumors, of course, when you're kids, you know, they develop into strange things. And I guess I probably thought that was something he did on a regular basis. And of course, I would also see the album covers when I'd go to the mall and I'm at the record store looking through things. So I knew all about him.
And you know, did they talk about him in church? Like, did they preach against, you know, don't let your kids listen to this guy, or was he singled out?
One of the funny things about those rock music seminars is they would basically spend all their time on past music, like music from the 70s. And they'd be talking about Rush and Zeppelin and AC/DC and Kiss and, you know, some things that we were listening to. But, of course, by this time, we're listening to Van Halen, of course, Kiss still. And
they weren't on the cutting edge.
And they never brought that stuff up. But, yeah, because of Ozzy's, you know, biting the head off the bat, you heard about him everywhere. And so there was, that was a funny time. But as I grew up and started collecting music, you know, I'm sure that at some point I probably mowed the yard to make my allowance money and went to the mall and, you know, bought these different records on cassette. Back then I was buying everything on cassette. And I had all four of these records and listened to them all the time. I also remember I had on VHS, I had a recording of the Ultimate Sin concert. And there's a guitar solo.
I had that too, man. It was so good. So good.
Smoking. You can pull that up on YouTube and watch it still. And so, yeah, up until, you know, I discovered Metallica, this was what I was listening to, along with Motley Crue and Quiet Riot and Def Leppard and Rat and Dawkins, you know, all those bands. Raven.
And did you have to listen in secrecy? Like, were your parents against you listening to this stuff?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of, it was, like I said before, it's like, it was like bringing drugs into the house. I had to do everything very secretly. And as if we ever do some other records like Balls to the Wall and things like that, I've got little stories to tell about how I snuck a listen to that stuff. And yeah, it was a funny world. I hated it, of course, but it also added a whole nother element of excitement to it because it was
right.
You know? So yeah, anything totally. With drugs and heavy metal, man, if if you got the chance to taste it, boy, that was some sweet stuff.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, we've said this before on the podcast, but in some ways I feel like, you know, music has been devalued because you can go on Spotify and find not everything, but just about anything. You can go on Apple Music or YouTube and there it all is, where it's back in the day. You know, for me, I always tell the story. Well, you had to use my paper route money and ride my bike 10 miles, you know, to the strip mall you know, there was so much effort in getting them music. I will say my parents, although they were, my dad was definitely somewhat conservative, my mom somewhat conservative, but they kind of let it go. They didn't love Ozzy, but I don't think they felt like it was a danger for me to listen to it. But it's interesting to hear that you add this level that, you know, not only was it not right there and readily available like on Spotify to you, but you also had to kind of sneak it. It had to be on the down low. I love that. That in itself made it more valuable.
It sure did. Yeah. but you know, and the album itself is great. You know, I love records from this time, this era, because, and this album is a good example of how, you know, this is technically more on the pop metal side, but it still kind of has a dark feel to it, which a lot of records did back then. You know, everything up until, I always feel like once Madonna came out, all music changed. Everything went super poppy and dancey sounding. But before that, all these bands, hard rock and metal bands, kind of had a, you know, a dark feeling to their music. And this record, you know, is a good kind of pop metal record, but still has its feet in the heavy metal world. And man, Randy Rhoads' solos are awesome. I love B, you know, that little tune that he wrote for his mom.
Sure.
That's a song I've been learning how to play on the guitar the last few years that I really enjoy. I like No Bone Movies, but I feel like that song's a bit out of place. You all may disagree, but I kind of feel like that You Looking At Me would have been a better track.
That's interesting. Let's bring Seth back in. Seth, because you had in the comment section mentioned No Bone Movies, and I like what you say. Can you tell the listeners how you feel about that song?
Yeah. To me, it sounds like a studio outtake. Like, it's totally fun. It's just like, here's one riff and we're going to take it all the way through the song.
Kind of a bluesy rock and roll riff. Yeah.
Yeah. But I agree with Ed. I'm not sure it holds together with the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a strange little break from, you know, all that virtuosity and Mr. Crowley, and then going on into the classical feelings of Revelation, Mother Earth. And
I mean, I never thought of it like that, but now that you guys are pointing that out, I can see that. But I never really thought of that. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah. And also, Mark, you mentioned some of the bonus material. I recently signed up for Apple Music, and I've been listening to some of those live tracks on what's, I guess, probably a deluxe edition of this. And man, those have been great to listen to. They're really well produced, and Randy Rhoads sounds like he's on fire on whatever night they were recording that stuff.
Yeah, on the Goodbye to Romance one, where they basically take off the drums and bass, which
I listened to that today. Yeah.
Which, you know, you can talk about, well, there was such issues with Lee and Bob suing Sharon and Ozzy for so many years over and over again. I always wonder, did they just kind of do that just to show, hey, we didn't need these guys on this song anyways, it's still awesome without them. But who knows? That's just speculation on my point part. But what I will say is you hear things on that version of it that are probably there on the other version, but are kind of just lost in the mix. And so there's some real cool sounds from the guitar that kind of creep through that I just don't notice on that other bass drums version of that song. So it's definitely worth a listen. Definitely the bonus material. I feel like sometimes these deluxe editions and stuff that they kill the vibe of the original records from the 70s and 80s when you start adding on songs that, you know, were probably not on the album for a reason in the first place. But yeah, so I do feel it's always important for listeners to listen to that original cut of the record and the original tracks of the record to get a feel for how it was supposed to sound artistically from start to finish. So Metal Dan, back to you. Any other further thoughts before we hang it up here? We got about 2 minutes left on this Zoom call.
Just a quick one. Yeah, in the book, Rudy asks Randy, what's this No Bones movie song about? What do you mean by that? And Randy kind of laughed and tells him what that is. That's an Ozzy reference. I have a question. Do you remember where you were when Randy died?
Yes, I do. I was in the seventh grade. I was in Miss Odbert's class. I lived in a town called Mequon, Wisconsin. And I remember that Ozzy was all the rage at the middle school, Lakeshore Middle School, it was called. And I moved there recently from New Jersey. So I was kind of a little bit of a fish out of water. But, you know, New York, everyone's like, oh, it's just so rock and roll, so great. And I used to listen to WNEW and the big rock stations like when I was in sixth grade in New York. But when I got to the Midwest, programming was different. And like I said, they were playing half the songs or more off this record, which they were not doing in New York. And later, even in that, if I remember from the Rudy book, I mean, the Midwest was a stronghold for Ozzy back in those days. And I just feel like he was flourishing there. And that was probably a lot to do with the radio stations in smaller markets like Milwaukee embracing the album. But we're going to have to wrap it, guys. Down to the last 30 seconds, but I appreciate your support and everything you do for me on Patreon. Let's do another one of these. We got to get Ride the Lightning in there for sure.
Yes.
Guys, have a great evening. Thank you.
Take care.
Right on. See you, friends.
See you, guys. All right. That's going to do it. Thank you to the patrons who joined me on this show. Thank you to all the patrons who support me on Talking Metal. Come on, guys. There's someone out there somewhere who can do five bucks a month, man. Come on, join us. We'd love to have you. We need the support. We're going for 100 patrons. That's our goal. We're at 51. But I did want to say that this Tuesday will be a rare Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, where I don't put up a new episode of Talking Metal. I am moving this weekend. My computer's going to be ripped apart. I'm completely stressed out over it. So that's that. There will be no episode of Talking Metal next week, a rare Tuesday without a new episode. I do hope to be back the week after that, going strong for you guys. Okay, so
Take care of yourself, and I'll miss you next week, but don't worry, I will be back. Thank you.